Part 2, Chapter 3, Self-Control, Part 2. In our previous reflections, we saw that self-control, as practiced and applied in this world, cannot possibly be a liberating phase on the sevenfold path. It merely contributes to the suppression of the instincts in one's own being, as a result of which we individually or collectively build up a field of tension which must periodically discharge itself. Thus, we constantly create the causes of suffering for ourselves and for each other, evoking the situation which Johann Valentin Andreae so magnificently describes in the alchemical Wedding of Christian Rosicross. The masses on the bottom of the pit, in their desire to escape suffering, kick, strike, hinder, and oppress each other to such an extent that it is truly a miracle that anyone succeeds in his endeavors. There is but one way to escape and relieve the suffering of humanity, namely by going the path of the Sangha, the path of sanctification, of universal healing. We already dealt with some phases of this path. First of all, we must possess the key to the path, the key which the Bible calls faith. Faith comprises possession and experience of and positive reaction towards the permanent atom in the heart sanctuary. Whoever is able to use this key mounts the first step of the path and attains virtue. A new blood basis is formed, a different blood structure. Then the pupil becomes fit for the path, obtaining aptitude from within. On this blood basis, the pupil ascends the second step. He arrives at knowledge. The vibration of the permanent atom and the ensuing altered hormonal functions carry out a wonderful process in the head sanctuary. The torch of the pinealis is lit, through which the pupil makes first-hand contact with the universal light of the gnosis. You know that there are four different states of ether, each of which may be divided into three aspects. So there are four times 3 or 12 different ether functions. It is also important to know that ether functions in world and mankind never manifest themselves alone, but always as a group. One group of four ethers works exclusively with and through the head sanctuary. We refer to them as mental ethers. Secondly, there is a group of four ethers of the same nature as the mental ethers, but of a different vibration and therefore of a different efficacy, which collaborates exclusively with the heart sanctuary. These are called astral or electric ethers. The third group of four ethers collaborates exclusively with the pelvic sanctuary, the so-called blood ethers. The position often taken in occult literature, namely that reflective ether exclusively causes our mental faculties, is totally wrong. A whole group of four ethers causes our thinking and the other faculties of the head sanctuary, just as four ethers together build and maintain our blood. So we see that four ethers are active in our dialectical field of nature in 12 aspects, states, or vibrations. These 12 powers or foods emanating from the four and working in three groups are mentioned in every universal philosophy. The entire visible universe is built up of these 12 forces, and an endless series of symbolic derivations in the universal language was the result. Being one, they are God revealed in nature. As three, they are the Trinity. As four, they are the four holy foods, or the four lords of destiny. In their totality, they are alluded to as the 12 patriarchs, the 12 apostles, the 12 dhyanis, the 12 hierarchies, etc. Now, think of a person wholly of this order of nature. It is clear that in this person, the three sanctuaries function in absolute harmony with one another, so that the ether assimilation processes and their effects show absolute correlation. This person exhibits a certain basis of life, a specific level on which life unfolds. This basis of life is the blood basis in which the total karmic driving power of the auric being is revealed. The totality of our subconsciousness, our dialectical past recorded in countless states of being by the magnetic points of the aural being, makes itself known in and through the blood. In accordance with this, the natural ethers absorbed by the spleen system are attuned to the nature of this person. In this way, the prime movers, the motoric activities of life, are guaranteed. Therefore, we state that this blood eye working from the liver spleen system is the guiding, the predominant nature ego. We perceive that in the first years of childhood, the dominant factor of the person in our example is his blood EI. At that time, the other two nature egos are still dormant. But after a few years, the second nature ego awakens up. The function of the heart sanctuary begins to develop. The child's emotional life takes form. Anatomically, this means that the sternum, IE, that which radiates, the breastbone, begins to function. The sternum is a wonderful organ. It has 12 pairs of paths for supply and removal, which directly connect it to the serpent fire, and two magnetic points, one attracting and one radiating organ. This remarkable system also plays a great part in the function of the permanent atom, but for the moment we will leave this subject out of consideration. Once the emotional life of the child becomes a perceptible personal factor, the sternum clearly begins to assimilate ethers by means of its attracting organ. Desire, feeling, emotional life exert their influence so that the sternum radiates a yearning, a searching, desiring radiation. By its power of attraction, it now absorbs powers which are supposed to satisfy the desire. These assimilated powers are ethers of a finer radiation and vibration than the blood ethers. But note that these astral ethers collaborating with the heart sanctuary, though of a finer vibration, are no higher in quality than the blood ethers. They are different simple because of the totally new group of functions which must necessarily be called into being in the growing child. Individual personal desires must be responded to. If the auric being radiates a strong materialistic impulse, this will be etched into the child's blood first of all. If by growth and stronger skeletal formation, the heart sanctuary begins to show itself, the color, the nature of the primary yearning of the heart will clearly demonstrate the desire for possession. This clearly proves the correlation of blood ethers and astral ethers. But the growing human being is not yet complete. He still lacks one factor. The living conditions have been created. The desire for life works. Now the workings of the head sanctuary must still be born. This birth is effected in a third phase of growth. Man is equipped with a faculty enabling him intelligently to employ his life powers and realize his purposes independently of others as far as possible. Thinking, will, memory, imagination, and other such aspects of the head sanctuary become manifest, namely, by means of a third category of the four ethers, the mental ethers. These too are natural ethers, but of a different vibration again. Now the person is fully grown, he can in reality eat of the 12 breads. The 12 aeons of nature speak in and through him. The auric being guides him completely by means of these 12 apostles. Such is the person of this nature, guided by this nature's God. Now let us consider once again the processes of the Sangha, the path of healing, behind the sternum, glows the permanent atom, and the pupil awakens this star of Bethlehem. When the pupil directs his attention toward this inner fiery principle and gives himself up to it in self-surrender, it is clear that a new desire will develop to the very marrow, a desire with remarkable aspects. For this desire springs neither from the blood eye nor from any other working of nature. It springs from a different, a pre-human nature. In accordance with this highly unnatural desire, the sternum now radiates a powerful impulse. This prayer, which consists not of a mumbling of words, but springs, as it were, from the sighing of the bones, is answered. The star stops above Bethlehem, the bread house of divine nature, and the candidate is nourished. He becomes virtuous, fit for the path. But understand this well, this process means an immense disturbance of the 12-fold process of nature. It means war in the inner self, the sword in our soul. The heart sanctuary now fulfills two functions, assimilating the astral ethers of this nature and those of divine nature. This causes a disturbance in the heart. The fortress of the 12 powers of nature, the fortress of the 12-fold Old Testament order, is attacked in the center, in the heart. The beam of fire of the Gnosis enters the blood and simultaneously attacks the functions of the head sanctuary. For when our desire, the radiation of our sternum, fundamentally changes, our mind must follow. Can you think of a single desire on which our thoughts do not concentrate as well? When we follow the voice of the heart under the urge of the permanent atom, the head sanctuary will shine like the dawn. The new sun colors the clouds of the morning. A second stroke of the sword cleaves our soul. Virtue is followed by knowledge. A second conflict begins, for besides the mental ethers of this nature, those of the new nature also penetrate the system. In the pupils ennobled to these processes, there are, thanks to their state of being, two considerations of the heart and two considerations of the mind, the voice of the Gnosis and the voice of ordinary nature. Supplement your faith with virtue, the new stirring of the heart, and virtue with knowledge, the new functioning of the pineal gland. From this stems that intense inner conflict, that mercy, and that necessary cleavage of the soul. What must you do now? Take the third step. Supplement your knowledge with self-control. Existentially, a new power dwells within you. Well then, follow that power, follow the track it shows you. We do not mean here the natural self-control we discussed earlier, i.e., the suppression of the 12 forces of nature with all the negative results and effects of binding to nature. Rather, follow the voice of the light which existentially has been ignited in you by the Spirit of God. Then this will require no effort of you. You need only turn away from the voice and impulses of nature within you and direct yourself to that other one, that new one within you. That is self-control. Then you will notice that the old nature gradually falls silent and dies. So self-control, in the sense of the sevenfold holy law, means directing oneself on the basis of true virtue and knowledge, following of the new inner voice. This self-control is the third step of the path. Perhaps you will now ask, how do we know whether our self-control comes from the touch of the new nature? Could it not be that we once more fall prey to ordinary self-restraint and its explosive consequences? The answer becomes apparent on the fourth step. Supplement your self-control with steadfastness. Whoever proves steadfast unto the end, whoever is able to be steadfast to the end, will, in the words of Revelation, becomes blessed.